From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It is the 8 o'clock hour, and that means we get to do the news roundup. The news roundup is a fun little thing we like to do every single day. We look back on all the other shows, we find out what they were talking about, and then we just bring it to you guys. Like, we boil down 3 hours of their show to sometimes it's a minute, sometimes it's a minute and a half, and it's really the best part of their show. So if you don't want to listen to anything else, you can just listen to News Roundup. Then you've gotten everything from Cairo in one single day.
It is highly concentrated.
Yes, highly concentrated.
For effective delivery.
Yes. All right. That is, of course, Matt Butler, who joins me every single day on the News Roundup. Matt, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
All right. I'm going to play you this trivia clip. We got to pay this off. This is a lot of people got this earlier when we did it on the start of the show. I'm going to play it for you now. Good luck.
You know what, big boy? You're grown up. Yeah, I dig that. Because you're grown up and you're grown up and you're grown up.
It's short and sweet. You know what that one is?
I do not.
All right. That is, of course, Vince Vaughn in Swingers.
Ah.
You remember Swingers?
I do. Yes, yes.
Swingers is one of those movies that it was kind of a touchstone in my life. Although it was, I was too young for it at the time. Like when the movie, I'm trying to think when the movie came out. I think it was early 90s.
Okay.
And I just loved it. It felt like kind of a movie that like your cool big brother, I didn't have a big brother, but like it felt like a movie that your cool big brother would like.
Yeah.
And I still to this day, Swingers is just one of those like simple movies to enjoy. I think all guys.
Yes. It's a good movie. Yeah.
Tend to like Swingers.
I enjoyed it.
Production wise, I was actually, I was fascinated by it because it was kind of interesting how they got the movie made. You know, who wrote the movie? I'm sorry. Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
So he's the star of that movie, and he wrote it. He did not direct it, but he did star in the movie, and he wrote the movie. So I guess at some point, his dad gave him some screenwriting software. And, you know, all screenwriters write with a couple different versions of a software. And so his dad was like, I know you're into screenwriting, and, you know, I want to get this for you. I think this would be a good way for you to get over. I guess he'd just been broken up with or something like that. It's like, I kind of know the story. But so he starts writing the script.
Yeah.
And this is the first thing he starts to write, and it ends up becoming Swingers.
Wow.
And he just basically wrote it about the experiences that he was having at the time living. I mean, this was his life, like living in Los Angeles, all these places that populate the movie, like they go to the Dresden and all these different cool bars, you know, for like Frank Sinatra's birthday and all these different things. Those are real places that he would go to. And so, and then he populates the movie with his friends. Like, I don't know if you knew this, but like Jon Favreau played in, you remember the movie Rudy,
which is a
massive, you know, wonderful movie that we've talked about many times on the show. So he played Rudy's like best friend in that movie. And that's where he met Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn played one of the football players in the movie. So the two of them kind of hit it off there. So he just populates the movie with his buddies, and they make this movie for like nothing. I think they made it for like 500 grand or something. And then in order to get it sold, they couldn't find anybody who wanted to buy it. So they're like, all right, we need to do like, you know, they do this big, when you're trying to sell an independent film, you need to put on a big show and you need to invite all these, you know, independent movie studios or distributors, people who you can get excited about it.
Yeah.
And then they hopefully will make a purchase.
Show up.
A lot of times this will happen at a place like Sundance.
Or Cannes.
Cannes is really more for like, I think of Cannes more as like movies that are already like well-financed and all that. Like Sundance is...
But Sundance is the
independent
indie.
Movies. You're looking for buyers.
Right.
So what they did was they rented out this big theater and they're trying to get people to go see the movie. But they like nobody's going to go see this movie that nobody knows. Nobody knows anyone in it. Nobody knows like that it's that they should care about it. So what they do is they go to the cast and crew and like all their friends, come see this movie and we need you to laugh harder at every single joke than you've ever laughed in any movie in your life. And so they just fill the theater with friends, which is a really smart idea.
Yeah,
I don't know
savvy.
Why other people don't do this. So they fill the movie with friends and then they have like, they manage to get just a couple of distributors or people who might come in, buyers to come and see the movie. And so they come and they're like, oh my gosh, people really love this movie. And then they end up selling it for, at the time, like some record amount because they just basically got their friends to convince them it was a great movie.
That's brilliant hustle right
there. Yeah, it's just good hustling.
Yeah.
But it was a really good movie. It's fantastic. So I obviously have a special place in my heart for that movie. All right, so that's Swingers. Good job guessing, everyone who got that. And shame for those of you who missed it. All right, on Seattle's Morning News, a library has found a perfect way to forgive overdue book fines. And you typed in perfect here. Let's see what that's about. I think it's a cat reference.
A library in Worcester, Massachusetts has come up with a unique way to relieve library late fees. The Worcester Public Library announced all you have to do is show them your cat. Through the end of March, people who have lost or damaged library books can bring a picture, drawing, magazine clipping, anything you'd like. They just want to see cats, and librarians will reactivate their library cards. Oh, they're awash with kittens. The New York Times reports the program is called March Meowness. In the first few days, the program has helped get hundreds of books returned, 400 to be exact. And now library branches have a growing mural of cat pictures. The library noted that since the pandemic, many people have not returned from the isolation and back to the public library. They're encouraging people to act meow and return to the glory days of the public library.
So they're what are they doing with cats? Can you explain this to me?
If you have a picture of your cat, or I suppose if you were to bring your cat, if it was so well behaved, then you can bring these cat pictures into the library and say, hey, here's my cat, here's my pet, whatever its name is, and get your card reactivated.
So they'll forgive your overdue fines?
Apparently, just for being a pet
owner. Just for bringing a pet?
Yeah. And I guess they have a wall up now. They display all these little cats, the apparently well-read cats, because they've had time to read these books.
I guess, yeah. They've had them for a long time. Well, good for them, I guess, if they're trying to get more cats in the building. I'm allergic to cats, so this is not something that I would do, but maybe I could show them a picture of a cat I don't own. I don't know where I'd get that picture.
I mean, yeah, are they going to like do a deep background check on this to make sure it's really
probably
your
not.
Cat?
No, probably not. And I'm sure you can AI this. I'm sure people just AI
just take
this.
A picture of the neighbor's cat.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Gian Ursula, is an arcade a good place to hold a bachelor party? Let's find out.
Is an arcade a good place for a bachelor party?
I just said that.
That's where I'm heading for mine, and I'm curious, do we need to do all of these standard bachelor parties, wedding showers? Gee, you were giving me a little grief for this one earlier, so I had to ask. Is an arcade a good spot for a bachelor party? Mind you, the world's largest arcade and a living, functioning museum.
Ursula, so Nick is telling me about his bachelor party. Now, you guys have got a pretty good sense of my personality and who we are. Now, Paul is telling me about his bachelor party. So, Ursula, I say, hey, so where are you going? He's going to New Hampshire.
Okay.
To an arcade.
What's in New Hampshire besides the
world's
arcade?
World's largest arcade.
Oh, that's truly why. Not family?
No, I'm going. Well, my family lives in Boston, and my cousins are going to come up too. So I'll see some East Coast family. But I'm specifically going for this arcade.
Okay, but here's my question. Have you ever in your life either overheard or in conversation or saw it on TV or seen it on social media, anyone says, hey, everyone, going to New Hampshire for my bachelor party? Let me just tell you, that is the most raisins in potato salad bachelor party I've ever heard in my life.
So he just think it's podunk. It's not exciting. He doesn't like it.
Who says they're going to New Hampshire? But the largest arcade, that sounds objectively cool to me. I didn't know that existed.
I don't know if I'd go to see the largest arcade in for my bachelor party, but I guess I mean, I don't know. For my bachelor party, we did not go to New Hampshire.
New Hampshire?
Took me a while to find that. For my bachelor party, we went to whitewater rafting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which was really fun.
Yeah,
and it was
an
like,
adventure.
It felt kind of like, felt a little risky. It felt like, you know,
adrenaline rush
with the guys. Totally. And, you know, it was great. It was a fun afternoon. Nobody died, thankfully, and so, you know, the wedding party was able to do what we needed to do. I'm trying to think, who other bachelor party? You know what the best bachelor party is, by far?
Tell me.
Is just golf weekends.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the best. My brother, he did a bachelor party weekend where we went away to Leavenworth.
Okay.
And we just went and played a bunch of golf. We ate at good restaurants, we played a ton of golf, and then he came back and got married.
There you go.
You know?
It's a classic.
Like Sideways, like the movie Sideways.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
Except without the horrible stuff.
Right. Yeah, minus that.
Minus all the horrible stuff.
Still, props to Paul Holden for a unique bachelor party. I mean, if your buddies are gamers, I can see where that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if they're super into it, great. Yeah. Great.
Why not?
Yeah, it's fun. I think it's a fun idea. It's different. It's you know, it's a little different, and I think that's fun too. All right, Jack and Spike. Jack's about to become a foster dad. What? No, he's not. Is he going to have kids? Jack's not going to have kids. He's a single dude.
So I get the email back, and I'm doing the orientation on Sunday.
What, this Sunday?
This Sunday.
That's awesome.
But my concern is basically this, is that I have just learned what a foster fail is, and I'm almost positive that's going to happen to me when I foster a kitty, because I signed up to foster senior cats, and...
So he is a foster cat father.
Yeah, a foster cat daddy.
This is a cat daddy. That sounds so creepy, doesn't it? A foster a cat daddy.
That's why it works.
Oh my gosh, gross. This sounds a lot like I guess the cat is the theme here, right? We had the Seattle's Morning News library cat thing.
Sort of theme today.
And now Jack is a cat daddy.
And that are hard to adopt.
So I think foster fail, if I understand it correctly, means you fall in love with the cat you're fostering and you want to keep it.
Yeah, that's basically okay. What
foster
happens.
Fail. It's a foster that you were just keeping this cat company and safe and loved until they get a permanent home?
Yeah, but other people do with kittens. And I signed up specifically for older kitties that have shelter problems. And so, and I also signed up to do bonded pairs. And so,
like more than one cat that are together being separated is going to really be bad for
them. Yeah, it's emotionally bad for them. So I signed up for that. But here's my problem is that I am so emotionally codependent that on things like when Nora was filling in, I asked Nora if I could get her anything. And she said, I want a LaCroix. For the next 5 consecutive days, I got Nora a LaCroix without her asking. Because I'm emotionally codependent. I have such a problem with this that I need to work on it.
Is it pronounced LaCroix or LaCroix?
I thought it was LaCroix.
I thought it was LaCroix too. Yeah, no, I think he's saying that wrong.
Yeah, might be.
He knows more about cats than he does about LaCroix. Do you have any pets, Matt?
I don't. Growing up, I had a beagle. A little beagle named Jeeves.
Oh, that's right. You've told me about Jeeves.
Yeah, he was a cute dog.
That's
Love
a great
that dog.
Name for a beagle.
Are you that way? Do you get very emotionally attached to your animals?
You know, my wife is laughing right now because she's listening to this segment and she's thinking to herself, absolutely not. He doesn't get emotionally attached to animals. She said, like, I was raised kind of in a farm situation. We had a lot of animals, so you don't really look at animals that same way. But the truth is that I really do actually get attached to animals. I had a bunch of, you know, I had 3 dogs growing up. I loved my dogs. One of them we had to give away. It's like still this devastating story that I carry with me to this day. And we still, my siblings and I, still give my dad heck about it.
Was that the one you said he had to take the dog somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah, to a farm. He took him to a farm. And every once in a while, we get updates on how he was doing at the farm.
Still thriving in his retirement?
I think he's still there 30 years later. I think that dog is still alive.
Living his best elder dog life.
He's doing great. Yeah. No, but my dog was a murderer. He was a killer. He was a hunting dog. He had that instinct. It was bred into him through many generations of hunting dogs. And so he just wasn't in a position at our house to get to scratch that itch. So he went out and did it on his own. And my parents decided that was time to get rid of that dog because I think he killed my neighbor's rabbits growing up. Yeah. Can't have that. He would kill snakes. He would kill, which I don't mind. I hate snakes, but he would kill garter snakes. Yep. He would kill, what else would he kill? He killed squirrels. I told you one time he jumped up. He was sitting in the backyard and I'm watching him just like stare at these 2 birds going over his head. And he's just kind of this bird flying over his head, just like low. And he's just going back and forth, his eyes, you know, like one of those cat clocks or something. Just going back and forth, back and forth. And then he just jumps up, snaps a bird midair.
Boom.
One time, he's going nuts in the yard. I don't even know what he's doing. He's just like going nuts. I'm like, oh, look at Calvin. He's going nuts. And he's rooting around. He's got his nose on the grass. And he's just sniffing away. And what he was doing, I didn't realize this, but well, I'll tell you what he's doing in a second. But he runs 10 feet forward. And he starts digging like crazy, digging really, really fast. And he digs, and then he stares down into the hole. I don't even know how he did this. And people are going to think that I'm making the story up, and I'm not. This was something he did, and I watched him do it, and I thought to myself, this dog's got a special talent for killing. He's sitting there staring into this hole that he's just dug, just like a statue, not moving, just his whole body. You've seen like hunting dog photos where they just kind of get rigid and they know they're looking at something they're about to kill. And he's staring down in this hole. And then a little tiny, you know, like a vole?
Yep.
A tiny little.
Oh, yeah.
Pops out in the dirt, jumps down. He like just snaps it up.
Wow.
So he was tracking it as it was going underneath the earth.
Yes.
And then he jumps ahead. I don't know how he did that math in his head. He's a very smart dog, I guess.
Special ops training, the canine corps.
Something. Yes. There you go. But he was a killer. So we had to get rid of him. But yeah, I get very connected to animals. Long-winded answer to your question. But yes, I get very connected. But he had to go. It's time
highly
for him
talented
to go.
Dog, though.
What's that?
Highly talented dog, though.
Yes. Yeah. If I was a hunter, it would have been a dream.
Perfect.
But because we didn't hunt, then he was just, his underutilized at our house. All right, John and Sherry, real fast. Let's get to this. John and Sherry, this is gross. Apparently, John starts his day in a very strange way. We're about to hear it. And thank goodness this is radio and this is not a visual medium.
Okay, let me explain before I play the song. Get up, go downstairs, feed the dogs, let them outside, and then I have a routine because I want to try to get going, start get oxygen to the brain. And I do this. And Nick comes up every once in a while. What are you doing? I'm like, best you don't see this.
So there's no audience. It's just you.
Why would I want an audience to this?
Not everything I do needs
an audience, although I'd appreciate it.
Okay, if you say so.
Although now he's telling his audience.
All right. Imagine me naked.
Oh, okay.
Ugh.
But put black boxes over parts you don't want to see, as long as you're drawing pictures in your mind.
Yeah.
Sherry, a little bigger black box would be appreciated. Sorry. All right.
Stupid.
Wait, why are you putting the black box over my face?
That's pretty funny.
Well, you said the things I don't want to see.
Oh. All right. And I play this song.
Is this Andre Bocelli?
Yes. All right. And then. Wish I were naked right now. Yes! Move that black box down a little bit, Sherry, because I'm going spread eagle.
Oh, my God.
Take it up, Andrew. Take it up.
So what does he do? He just gets naked and he listens to Andre Bocelli?
I guess he just gets naked. He does his, he gets pumped up. He does his stretches.
Does stretches?
Yeah.
And just naked?
Yeah, just one with nature.
He does live out in the middle of nowhere.
It begs the question, though. If you were to go the John Curley route in your morning routine,
yeah,
what would be your amp up song?
What would be my amp? That's a great question. Do you have an answer to that? Do you know what you would do?
I do.
What is it?
Something upbeat, synth pop, and kind of dark from the 80s. Get some Depeche Mode or some New Order, Blue Monday with that pumping rhythm.
There you go.
Get out there, embrace the harsh realities of nature. In my fullness of form.
Good for you.
That's what I do.
Good for you. I would, what's the theme song to that guy who used to, he's like that funny British comedian, Benny Hinn. Benny Hill? Not Benny Hinn.
Benny Hinn. Yes, the famous comedic televangelist from
Benny
Great Britain.
Benny Hinn is a televangelist. No, I'm not getting naked. Listen to that guy. You know Benny Hill?
Yeah,
right?
Benny Hill.
Remember his theme?
Yeah, I remember
like, just
his
like kind of silly,
yeah,
stupid.
It's fun.
No, I wouldn't do that. It's ridiculous.
Good stuff. Watch for me at Denny Blaine Park this summer, doing my best to live up to
that's
the John
right.
Curley
naked,
level.
That's
yeah,
the
exactly.
naked park, right?
Yeah. Look forward to it.
I think you should try that. All right. If anybody wants to check this out, then go to mynorthwest.com. I hope there's no pictures involved, but there's actually an article where John talks about this. You can check it out there. All right. That's it. Matt, we've done it again.
We've done it all.
We've reached the end of the show. Or the end of the segment, I should say. All right. We got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I saw this story. I was interested in this because I like the Olympics, at least like in theory. I like the Olympics. How much time do I actually spend watching them? Not a ton, if I'm being completely honest. And if I'm going to sit down and watch the Olympics, I actually prefer to watch the Winter Olympics. I'm just more interested in it. I guess it's just sports that I wouldn't normally try. And so there's just something about watching like speed skating or the luge, which seems really cool. The downhill skiing, or what's ski jump, I guess. I was going to say, what's the one where the ski guys jump? Ski jump is also very entertaining. I like that. But the Summer Olympics, it's coming up in Paris, Paris 2024 Summer Olympics, and it sounds like it's not going to be super comfortable for the visiting athletes who are on their way to France, or not yet, but they will be. When they're on their way to France, when they get to the famous Olympic Village where all the athletes get to stay, where they have all the cool restaurants and they have all the cool dorms and all the entertainment for them and all the stuff that athletes get, what they won't be getting this year is AC, not in Paris. Reuters has a story. They're not doing it in Olympic Village. And of course, it's because they're trying to fight climate change. And I guess the athletes have to pay the price for that. Listen to this.
Temperatures are expected to soar again in Europe this summer, but there will be no air conditioning in the athletes' rooms at the Paris 2024 Olympics. Organisers have pledged to host the greenest games ever, and in that spirit, buildings in the athletes' village were designed to avoid the need for aircon. So how will the athletes' rooms be cooled? The buildings have cooling systems that draw water from underground. The facades are also orientated, so they get little direct sunlight. Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo.
It was designed by architects, engineers and urban planners by positioning the buildings in relation to the wind, in relation to the River Seine, with studies and scientists who have looked into the subject, and comfort is guaranteed.
Paris gets like really hot in the summertime. I didn't realize this, but Paris does get really, really hot in the summertime. And I'm just wondering that, you know, they said there that it was going to draw water from deep underground, and I guess that's somehow going to cool the building in some way. Like, are we talking like a radiator situation? How's that going to work?
Et garantie.
But not all competitors are convinced. The Olympic committees from Australia, Brazil, Canada, and Norway are among those who believe these measures will not be enough. Australia's chef de mission, Anna Mears.
It's a massive logistical piece, but yes, we're looking at portable air conditioners to offer the athletes should they choose to, if it gets hot, if it's comfortable.
Meanwhile, several other delegations have said they fully trust that they will not need air conditioning at the Games. Organisers of Paris 2024 say they want to halve the carbon footprint compared with the Rio 2016 and London 2012 Summer Games. For Hidalgo, what matters is that the athletes' village is a sustainable project. The Paris mayor has one message to those nations.
I mean, personally, if I was running the Olympics, my message would be, hey, if you send your best and brightest and best athletes to our country, we're going to make sure that they're ready to perform so that you guys can do whatever you need to do to try to compete and win. But I guess in Paris, they do things a little bit different.
He's planning on installing air conditioning. Trust the science.
I think we have to trust science on two things. First, on what scientists are explaining to us, the fact that we are on the edge of the precipice, regarding the tipping point, the irreversibility of climate change, and that everyone must become aware of this, including athletes. And secondly, we must trust scientists when they help us to construct buildings in a sober way that allows us to do without air conditioning.
So this is really interesting, this idea of trusting scientists, because I hope that they're serious about that, because I have some great news for them. News that I think that the Olympic committees for all the countries who are about to visit Paris and wish that they had air conditioning would be happy to hear. Well, the great news is that our climate problems might not be caused by us. Listen to this article that I found. It's from Live Science. You guys know Live Science? Apparently, every 2.4 million years, Earth is affected by another planet that is in our, you know, solar system and rotates around the Earth, and not around the Earth, but rotates around the sun. And it gets a certain distance from the Earth every 2.5 million years. And when it does, the gravitational pull is so strong that it actually can change the ocean floors on our planet. So which planet might actually be responsible for some of our climate change? Well, listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, following on the news given in our bulletin a moment ago, the Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the large observatories of the country to keep an astronomical watch on any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars.
On the planet Mars. Bah, bah, bah. So listen to this, live science. Every 2.4 million years, Mars tugs on Earth so hard it changes the ocean floor. A new geological study suggests that Mars' gravitational field pulls the Earth closer to the sun over cycles lasting millions of years, which would warm our climate. So it might just be Mars that's making our climate change.
We come in peace.
That's from Mars Attacks. That's dumb. All right, so listen to this. From the article, researchers looked at geological data going back more than 65 million years. I don't even know they kept data 65 million years ago, from hundreds of locations across the globe, all of which suggest that deep ocean currents go through periods of strength and weakness, according to the study published in the journal Nature. This cycle is called Astronomical Grand Cycle and happens every 2.4 million years. During the strongest periods, oceanic currents known as giant whirlpools, these names are not super great, can reach the deepest parts of our seas, an area called the abyss. Life Science reports, these currents then reportedly erode sediments that then start to accumulate during calmer points during the cycle. The wildest part is that this cycle coincides directly with gravitational interactions between our planet Earth and Mars as we fly around the sun. And this is according to that study. So you have the mayor here in Paris who's trying desperately to stop climate change. I understand that. That's a very popular thing. It's a great way to get elected, especially in a city like Paris. But if we now know, scientists are now saying, listen, guys, we got to say, like, we've been looking at some data going back 65 million years. And as it turns out, what we might be seeing is not man-made climate change, but what we might be seeing is that the gravitational pull from Mars is changing the bottom of the oceans on our planet, and our Earth is covered in mostly water. So the bottom of the oceans, the sediment on the bottom of the oceans is actually being pulled by Mars. It's being agitated, which then accumulates and is part of why we're heating up. It's just part of our natural cycle. So if I know that, if I'm in Paris and I know that, then I would say, you know what? I guess you guys can turn on the AC. It may not matter for another 2.4 million years. If this study turns out to be true. But, you know, it sounds pretty reasonable to me. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I saw this story the other day, and I was fascinated by this. I actually thought that Patton Oswalt made some really good points. He was on The View recently, and he was promoting his new show called Manhunt, which digs into the aftermath of President Abraham Lincoln's assassination and the search for his killer. So he was on The View, and he was discussing the news as we know it today, and not like talk radio news, which is the best kind of news to get because it's talk and it's personality and it's a personal touch. He's talking about big media like Fox News, CNN, CBS, all these places that really, he says, you're not really seeing the news anymore. It's become something else. And I thought he made kind of an interesting point. And then I'm going to get into how life is actually pretty good. Despite what you see on the major news channels, life is pretty good. Anyway, here's Patton Oswalt's point.
We have been way closer to the brink than we are now. I think that right now, the way that the news portrays things, because a lot of times you are being exposed to the news business rather than the news. And the news business is about getting eyes on that screen. Right. Mm-hmm. So they do have to make it seem like there's no way back from this.
Yeah.
But we've been way closer, leaning over the abyss, and we've pulled ourselves back with way less technology and knowledge than we have now. And
I think the technology itself that makes it just as bad in many ways.
Yes, exactly. But also, any technology has its good use, its malign use, and then, oh, whoops. You know, you can use an axe to cut wood and build a fire. You can also drop it and cut your foot off, and you can murder someone with it. So it depends on how you use that technology. Mm. And this especially, when you watch Manhunt, you see that, oh, any new technology can be misused, can be and right now we have the chance, I think, to use technology, which, yes, has kind of messed things up in a lot of ways, to once again pull us back to the, from the brink.
I think that's really interesting how he says, you know, you're not really seeing the news, you're seeing the news business, which is an interesting point. I do think he's right in a lot of cases. You know, one of the things that we are very fortunate here on Cairo Radio is they really are very good about not kind of stepping in and saying, you have to do this, you have to do that. They put different personalities on. I mean, our shows are all personality-based, right? So, like, if you like Dave Ross, you're going to love Seattle's Morning News. And Colleen O'Brien, you're going to love Seattle's Morning News. If you want to listen to Gian Ursula, their specific way that they look at the world, you're going to love their show. Same with Jack and Spike, same with John and Sherry. Hopefully you feel that same way about me on this show. I mean, we're really, we try to be really upbeat on this show, and we try to always look at the positive side of things. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening in the world out there. But you know what? Like, the nice thing is, I feel like if we all feel like we're kind of in it together, which is a very Pollyannish way to look at things, I understand that. But if we, like, focus on the things that we have in common instead of all the differences and instead of all the things that everybody wants to yell about online and in chat rooms. Are people still in chat rooms? I don't think so. But online, in comment sections, if we focus more on like the positives, I just feel better. And so that's what we try to do here on this show. So I thought I would take a look for just a second at all the ways, not all the ways, but some of the ways that life has actually become better. There's this like kind of common idea where people look back and they go like, oh, I'm so nostalgic for the past. Everything was easier back then, back in the day, people say. They say, oh, life was so much simpler when life was easier. But they kind of forget that like there's a lot of great stuff about living right now. A lot of people say living right now is the best that life has ever been. Maybe like, you know, the way we get information and the way that everybody carries anxiety is not the best. I totally agree with you on that. But there's a lot of great things about living right now. So listen to this. Over the last 20 years, and I went and I pulled all this information from all these different sites, and it's true, and just stuff that you can take with you. Little nuggets. Here's some Jake's nuggets. It's a horrible thing, but here's some Jake's nuggets for you. Over the past 20 years, the proportion of people living in extreme poverty has almost been cut by half. 200 years ago, 85% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty. 20 years ago, it was 29%. Today, it's only 9%, which means that 7% of people around the globe live in middle-income countries. In 1800, among all babies who were ever born, roughly half died during their childhood. Life expectancy, here's another one. Flying has gotten 2,100 times safer over the past 70 years. 2016 was the safest year in aviation history. The odds of being fatally injured in a plane crash are just 0.00025%. In 1905, a Vermont doctor and a chauffeur were the first to successfully drive across the country from San Francisco to New York. It took them 63 days. You can now fly across the country in a matter of hours. Close to 20% of males born in the U.S. died before their first birthday in the year 1900. Today, that mortality rate doesn't reach that high until you get to the age of 62. In 1929, Americans spent more than 60% of their disposable income on necessities. Today, just a third, which is pretty good. Yeah, I get it. Inflation's bad, and they need to do something about that. But still, it's a lot cheaper than it used to be. All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. I hope you stick around and get all of our happy perspectives. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights. It's getting better all the time. I used to